Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Kwame is an American rapper, singer, and record producer. In 1989, he released his debut album, Kwame, The Boy Genius, featuring A New Beginning. In 1990, he released his second album, A Day in the Life of a Pokadelic Adventure. In 1992, he released his third album, Nasty. And in 1994, he released his fourth album, Incognito. In 2000, Kwame emerged as a record producer, sometimes working under the name K1 Million. He produced for artists such as LL Cool J, Mary J. Blige, Keisha Cole, Missy Elliott, and Christina Aguilera. In 2004, he co-produced with Eminem Lloyd Banks' hit song On Fire. The single has been certified gold by the RIAA. In 2005, he co-wrote and co-produced Tweet's single Turn the Lights Off and Will Smith's single Switch. As a producer, Kwame has sold over 30 million records. Kwame has also written scores and music for film and TV, including Drumline, Step Up 1 and 2, Freedom Writers, Coach Carter, and Fantastic Four. In 2025, Kwame released his fifth album, The Different Kids. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Kwame.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Well, right now I am in sunny California, USA. I'm doing well. It's not too early in the morning yet anymore, so I'm fully locked in.
Now, let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be creating music, I want to be in this world, and how did that journey progress?
I started my musical journey at four. My family on all sides was surrounded by musicians. So I started playing the drums. From there, I was playing the piano. From there, I started playing the trumpet. And this is before hip hop. So then when hip hop comes out, I am now 6, 7. And then I hear my first rap record, which is Rapper's Delight. And I'm like, this is what I want to be, period. I want to do this. So from that point, I didn't understand the music business. You know, I just wanted to learn everything. I wanted to learn what turntables were and what mixing was, what instruments went into making records, what synthesizers and drum machines. So I did nothing but immersive education in that. And then by the time I was like, say, 14, you know, I'm loving rap records. But when I heard Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick for the first time, I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I want to do. And I saw them perform and I was like, yeah, that's it. That's exactly what I wanted to do. So now I'm 13, 14 years old. Now I'm on a mission. I'm on a laser focused mission. And so that's when I started writing songs and producing beats and doing all that kind of stuff, which eventually led to my record deal. And I was 16 when the first album came out.
And do you...
Yeah, I was a kid on a mission. I was on a real mission.
I know that kind of mission. I know that kind of focus. I understand it completely. Do you still play all those instruments, the drums, the piano, the trumpet?
Definitely not the trumpet. That was a thing that I was in, like I was in a band when I, you know, a band class in school. But all of my production work, I'm playing those instruments here and there, whether I'm sampling, whether I'm actually playing or playing the drums and then sampling the drums that I played. I'm doing one of those things. I use those attributes in all levels of my music making. No. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not like Liberace or anybody. I'm not going to get on stage and do a whole piano recital. I'm not going to do that.
You signed your first record deal and it came out at the age of 16. Was it challenging being assigned and being on, you know, already at that age? I know you were focused, you were laser focused.
Yes.
And it was part of the plan. But was it challenging being a young person in the industry?
The biggest challenge for me was the fact that my parents were going through a divorce. And I had these record contracts and I didn't know how to let them know. And so when I did let my parents know, they had a divorce attorney look at the contracts and not an entertainment lawyer. So that was a big challenge, you know, trying to get my parents on board and that divorce attorney on board, you know, and because you're a minor, you're in at least in the States, you're a minor and you have to have those parameters. So I think that was my biggest challenge.
And how long did it take for them to come around?
Pretty quickly, okay. Because I don't know if you're a product of a divorce.
Yeah.
Parents or anything, but when you have parents that are getting divorced, they try to do things that please the kids quicker than they would normally do it when they were together. So, you know, everything happened pretty quick and I was able to sign the contract and make the record.
Tell me, how do you create a song?
Well, how I create the song is I base the song on a situation. It could be a phrase. It could be a situation that I just went through that day. It could be something that somebody said to me. And my mind automatically goes to work, where I create what the hook is going to sound like, what the music is going to sound like. So I usually create the whole entire thing in my head. And I go over and over and over. So when I get into the studio, it's like me just spitting it out. But it's all up here first. And it'll sit up here for months. And then one day I'll finally decide to go in and do it. But yeah, anything, it could be the type of day. It could be a bad day, a good day. Somebody saying a great thing to me. Somebody saying a bad thing to me. It doesn't matter. Those things create songs for me.
Now, when you've had this thing in your brain for months, do you still remember it as from the first day? And doesn't it frustrate you playing in your mind all the time? Don't you have to let it down so that you don't forget it?
Well, what I do is I just put notes down in my phone.
Ah, okay.
And I'll hum the melody. I'll do things like that. I'll do it that way. And so I'll go back to my notes. And then I'll put it all together because I'll do the notes in fragments. And then when I put it all together, it'll come out the way I wanted it to come out. But it usually starts with me humming in a phone.
So it's like a puzzle, pieces of the puzzle making a picture.
Yes, yes, literally. It's literally like that. Or building a building. Yeah. It's literally like I'm taking like Lego and stacking them up and it turns into something at the end. But usually in the beginning, it's like a bunch of Lego pieces all over the place. But I know I have the picture of what I want to make. Okay. And then I just have to put the pieces together.
Do you ever collaborate with others in the writing process?
You know what? I don't work well with other people. Yes, I have. As a music producer and songwriter, I have been put in positions where I had to collaborate with other writers. But the songs never come out as good as they come out when I do it myself. And it's not saying that I'm better than or anything. It's saying that when I come up with something, I come up with a full piece. So if I'm collaborating, I'm only giving you a portion of what it should be as a whole.
Yes.
If that makes any sense. I don't have problems collaborating. But I don't know. I'm just like one of those loner kids that I'm so used to doing everything by myself, recording, writing, producing. So when someone else comes into the atmosphere, it's just weird for me, you know, because I'm an introvert. So it's weird for me to start working with other people like that. But I will, you know, if I have to.
What is coming up over the next period of time? I know it's all very secretive in your guys' world. So can you tell us what you can?
A couple of things. Right now, I'm laser focused on the album, of course, and creating new visuals and gearing up for a tour, possibly in the top of 2026. That's where a lot of my focus is. I said to you earlier, I collect toys.
Yes.
And I'm into toys, and I also am a co-owner of a toy company. So, like, for example, this is a figure that was made in the likeness of how I was back in 1990, but we're making toys and figures, and one of the figures that's going to come out is I'm going to do a bundle with my vinyl, and with the vinyl you get to have a Kwame figure that goes with the vinyl, and there's other things. If you could go and check out our toy site, it's called Let's Be Onyx. So it's LETSBEONYX.com. And you can see these toys that we make. It's all for pre-order. So that's the thing that I do, like, on the side. I like that space as well. So between toys and music, my time is full. There's two videos that are out. So you could go to any of the places that you like to stream music and stream The Different Kids, Kwame, The Different Kids. It's 27 minutes of pure enjoyment. All the songs blend in together. It's more of a concept. I think you would really enjoy it. It's not today's hip hop. It's not yesterday's hip hop. It's just a musical and introspective journey. And I think a lot of people would enjoy it.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking,
yes,
the booklet, the thank yous, all those various things, listening to song one, two, whatever number. I'm sure you may or may not be aware, a massive uptick of a physical around the world. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be in the basket, and they monitor it for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing,
yes,
that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids buying these products. But then we also have streaming platforms that you mentioned. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think physical product like CDs and vinyl are very important because it's a way, like you said, to personally connect with the artist. And it feels like you own a piece of that work. A streaming platform is literally like saying, I'm going to go into a store every day, look at a jacket, try the jacket on, leave the store, come back, try the jacket on, but it's never my jacket. That's what streaming is. It's never yours. If you lose your phone, if you don't pay your account, you lose the music. But if you buy a record, if you buy a CD, it's yours. If you lose it, you buy it again. And I think the younger kids are understanding that. And for them, it's like a piece of nostalgia. It's like something they only read about or something they've only seen in movies. And now they can have it for themselves. Just like kids like to buy Polaroid cameras. You know, that's a thing. They love it. They could use their phone, but it's like a cool thing to have, a Polaroid camera or a record player or a CD player or a cassette. People are buying cassettes.
Mm.
And I think that it speaks to the fact that when someone really loves an artist, they really want to support them. And, you know, because you get things for free, you get what you pay for. So if you don't pay anything for it, you're just going to get anything. So once you know that you're buying and you're purchasing, you know you're invested. You want this. So I think it's very important.
I love your analogy of the jackets and going into the store. I think that's really, really, it's a brilliant analogy. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, I live for the live performance. To explain it, say that there's 10,000 people in front of you. They're giving you energy, and you as a single person is returning the energy of 10,000 people. You're returning it. It's an energy exchange. If it all goes well, it's an energy exchange. And you allow people to feel exactly what you felt when you created that work. And that's usually the only time you can do that. You can see people feel it. You can give them that energy. They can return the energy to you. And it's a reserve, like, because you might be out of energy, but when they return the energy to you, it fills you back up and you return it back. And I just think that it's an amazing experience for anybody that does it, whether you're in the audience or whether you're on the stage. It's an amazing experience.
Okay, I'm the guy standing right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming. I'll take my phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, then I put it away. I notice the people around me have their phones out for a lot of time. They're videoing, they're posting, they whatever they're doing. You reference the energy exchange, you reference the feeling. Do you not feel that people on their phones all the time are taking away from that, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I think society is conforming to living in two dimensions instead of three. We see everything through the lens of our phone now. We walk down the street like this. We're ready. When something happens, somebody's fighting. Oh, the phone is right there. You know, somebody's on stage. The phone is right there. I've been to shows where they make you put a phone in a locker. You cannot bring your phone into the show. And I don't understand how anybody can experience while you're focusing on the phone, but then at the same time, you don't want to let go of that experience, so you feel like you have to capture it. And so, like, I don't really care. Like, when I see people with the phone and I'm on stage, I go right to the phone and I start rapping into the phone. You know, I do. I go right to the phones. You know, because if this is your experience, I got to give you that experience too. You know, I think that sooner or later people will understand, like, they kind of missed the show because they were too busy doing that. And so, you know, it's a balance. It's a balance. You know, just like, I don't know if I should tell everybody to put their phones in a locker because they may have kids at home. They may have something that comes up and they can't break away for those 2 hours. So it's a case-by-case basis. But I don't mind. I don't mind. I just think people should be more cognizant of the experience. Hey, you want to spend your money just to go like this, that's on you. You're wasting your experience. And I think in life, just not just a show, in life, we are losing our life experiences because we're too busy scrolling other people's life experiences. How do we have our own life experience when we're always paying attention to someone else's life experience? I think if I was the king, I would be like, look, from this time to this time, no phones. You know, enjoy life. Understand life. You can come back to it later on.
I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP. NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. Parts of that, there are three processing skills that each of us has. And we each have a dominant one, a secondary, and tertiary. Now, dominant means you'll be in it most of the day. Secondary, maybe a couple of hours. Tertiary, maybe 10 minutes. Something kicks into each of us as a child, which allows us to have this. Now, you've got visual people. Now, visual people create pictures of what they're hearing, of what they're processing. Auditory people, it's about the words, the sentences, and about, you know, the actual audio information they're receiving. Kinesthetic people, it's about the energy, the tone of voice, the feeling, and the emotion. Now, focusing specifically on music, when you hear music, whether it's your own music or of others, are you seeing pictures of what you're hearing? Is it about the lyrics or is it about the feeling?
I see pictures. I see sound, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's not a conscious thing at all. But when I hear songs, when I hear my songs, if I start with my songs, I see the song. I don't hear the song. I see it. So, like, for example, when it's time to shoot a video or something like that, it's not a hard thing to figure out what I want to do because I already saw it. Also, sometimes a song just triggers instant nostalgia. You know, like, I can listen to a certain song and all I see is my grandmother's living room. It could be places I've never even seen before, but I see it through song. And I know that there's science behind it, like you just explained. But for me, it is 100% a visual thing. That's why I know people that only go by the tone of somebody's voice. So I know people, like, say, singers that won't like a song because they don't like that singer. Where for me, I don't care about the singer. I see the whole picture and I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm not even paying attention to the singer necessarily. It's like saying I'm focusing on a leaf and not the whole landscape. You understand? I don't need to focus on the one leaf that may not be fully green. You know, I want to see the whole picture. And that one leaf is not going to spoil the picture for me. Now, if the picture is spoiled, that's a different story. I can listen to any form of music. There's not one form of music that I can't listen to and get something from, get a picture from, get a story from, get an idea from. I don't have to like it all the time. I can always tolerate it. Any kind of auditory thing gives me a picture at all times.
But now, when you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to relax and enjoy it for it is creating the pictures, or is your technical creative brain unpacking it?
I'm unpacking it, depending on the music. I choose to listen to music that I can't unpack by choice. So, for example, it's nothing against current hip-hop, but I can unpack a current hip-hop like a McDonald's Happy Meal. It's just... You know, I can unpack that. So that I'm not going to listen to. But if I'm listening to John Coltrane, I see the jazz club that he's in. And I see the 1950s recording or 60s recording studio. I see it. Like, for example, when I listen to Prince, like this one particular song that I cannot unpack. And I've been listening to it for almost 40 years. And it's a song by Prince called Adore. And I listen to Adore. And I know he had 24 tracks to make this with. And I know exactly every instrument that he used on the song, but I can't unpack it. And every time I hear it, from the first time I heard it in 1986, I hear something different and I see something different. And that's like when I listen to Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life or Inner Visions, I can't unpack it. Or I choose to not unpack it. You know, I need to sit in that space and let it and be engulfed in that visual of that space. Because Songs in the Key of Life, another album called Inner Visions, another album called A Talking Book, puts me in a whole other visual space. Like I'm all the way gone. Like I said, John Coltrane, I'm all the way gone. And other artists, mostly artists from the past do that for me. And I choose artists from the past to listen to because I don't have their experiences. And so since I don't have their experiences, I'm able to listen to the music freely and not be able to be so technical about it. I listen to the Beatles. I can't unpack it. I listen to Billy Joel sometimes. I can't unpack it. Michael Jackson. Certain things I just can't unpack. I wasn't there. You know, so I try to visualize what it was like to be there. And that's what gives me the musical experience.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
My message to everybody is, you know, like the title of my album, The Different Kids, it's okay to be different. It's okay to not conform with society. It's okay to be not what people consider as normal. Because when you're different, and you set yourself to have any kind of goal, whether it's just waking up in the morning, when you set yourself out to have a goal, you have a 100% success rate because you did it your way. You were able to do whatever it is. You did it, it's done, and then you move on to the next thing, and you have a 100% success rate. So never be afraid of your differences. Never be afraid of stepping out of what people normally think you should be doing or could be doing. And trying those new things.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.